Environmental news, or more accurately, legal news about the environment, seems to be coming at a rapid rate lately. The latest plan for Western Oregon timber and the latest plan for Klamath Basin water got the lion's share of the headlines of late. But the Mackenzie River is also in the news. Eugene's major source of water is also a major source of fish, and that's the focus of a lawsuit filed recently. The Western Environmental Law Center filed the suit in federal court over the operation of the Mackenzie River fish hatchery. The suit is filed in the name of the Mackenzie fly fishers and the steamboaters. From the Mackenzie fly fishers, we have Bruce Anderson, who is the president-elect. Bruce, welcome.
Thank you, Jeff.
Good to have you here. And Dave Thomas joins us as well. He is a biologist and board member at the Mackenzie fly fishers. Hi, Dave.
Good morning.
So, Bruce, let's start with you. Give us the outline here for the basic issue with the Mackenzie River hatchery.
Well, Jeff, the issue relates to the fact that for many years the wild Chinook population of the Mackenzie has been declining, and it's gotten to the point where the decline is down to the fact of roughly 1,000 fish returning. And at the same time, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife has been planting around 800,000 smolts, hatchery smolts, on top of these wild fish. And we have the combination of this historic decline to the lowest point of this wild run, while we have this large number of fish being planted on top of them, and we have interbreeding, which according to biologists is supposed to not occur beyond a level of 10% at the absolute maximum between the wild and the hatchery fish, is at a record high of 60%. And so we've got the crossing of these two lines that finally gotten to the point where somebody had to step in and say to these agencies, you need to agree on a plan to protect these wild fish. You need to do something different than you're doing now.
So, Bruce, who operates the Mackenzie River hatchery?
It's actually a hatchery that's operated by ODF&W, but the Corps of Engineers really supplies the money pursuant to a federal plan for the operation of that hatchery.
So federal funding and operation, but state execution.
Yes.
Or it's essentially outsourced to the state of Oregon as it goes. Dave Thomas, we just got a brief idea of the numbers from Bruce about down to 1,000 fish. Give us a historic idea of what the wild Chinook salmon run was like on the Mackenzie.
Something over 40,000 going back to the end of World War II, and that number began to drop with the constructions of various dams on the Mackenzie River, which reduced habitat for spawning for Chinook salmon. And then a crisis was noted in the mid-90s with a precipitous drop down, and on overall that number has continued to drop. The species, because of the drop in numbers, the species was listed under the Endangered Species Act in 1999, with therefore the precept that there's something would be done to restore the population, and ultimately so that it would not be listed as an endangered species, and that has not happened. And Bruce just outlined for you why this has reached what we feel is a crisis point.
Is there a recovery plan on the books then for this? Is the spring run of Chinook salmon, wild Chinook salmon in the Mackenzie, is that right?
Well, there has been various plans, and the overseer of these plans under the Endangered Species Act is the Marine Fisheries Service, and they have said that the plan does not provide adequate protection. However, as we speak, that plan has never been approved. It has been in draft form and moving around since at least 2003, 10 years ago, and it is still in draft form, and the agencies, various agencies involved, have not agreed on what the content would be, and there is no approval. In the meantime, the fish decline, and there is no progress that we can see, and no progress for the immediate future without some kind of intervention.
We were talking about the lawsuit over the operation of the McKenzie River Fish Hatchery with Bruce Anderson and Dave Thomas of the McKenzie Fly Fishers. You can join this discussion on the Jefferson Exchange in the McKenzie River Basin and everywhere else you can hear us, 800-838-3760, anywhere around the region. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Dave, you're the biologist of the two of you. This must be especially frustrating because we hear this again and again about Endangered Species Act actions, that there'll be identifications of need, but then some determination of, well, we really don't have the money to deal with this right now. Is that a fairly, am I characterizing this appropriately?
Yeah, although I think it goes beyond money. It goes to priorities. The upper Willamette Basin from Willamette Falls to the end of the valley once had something over certainly 200,000 Chinook salmon, uniquely adapted subspecies. And each of the tributaries, that is the sub-basins like the Clackamas, the Manola, whatnot, had strong runs. Those runs of native fish are now extinct. So, or they have been simply replaced by hatchery fish who cannot reproduce at a rate that would make them self-sustaining. In other words, so you have to just keep planting if you want to, if you're going to have any fish in the water. The last remaining genetically intact and likely sustainable Chinook salmon population in the Willamette Basin is the McKenzie River. So that if this run is allowed to go extinct, then that's the end of it. There would be no genetic basis for reconstructing the rest of the basin. So it has implications well beyond just the McKenzie. And that's, again, a reason for us to feel that someone has to act.
So, Bruce Anderson, what is the effect you seek through the lawsuit? What action are you seeking to produce?
Well, there are two things. The overall thing is to require the two federal agencies, the Corps of Engineers and ODF&W, to agree on a plan that can be shown to ensure that the wild population will survive and grow back to sustainable levels, a plan that the National Marine Fisheries Service, the overseeing federal agency, can approve as likely to accomplish that result. And that's what Dave talked about. They don't have such a plan. They've been required since 2003 to have one. They still don't have it in effect. The second thing was, in the more immediately, we have to substantially reduce the numbers of wild fish that are hatchery fish that are planted on top of these wild fish, because if they keep planting at the 800,000 level while they keep debating, it's just a matter of a few years and we're not going to even be talking about the issue anymore because the wild fish will be gone. But that doesn't mean they can't plant some fish, continue to plant some fish, but when you have 60% interbreeding of wild and hatchery fish, when the goal is to keep it at or below 10%, I mean, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out that you can't keep planting those numbers. So they have to substantially reduce the plant of hatchery fish while they get this plan into effect that the federal agency can approve. But they can take their extra hatchery fish and put them in a lot of the rivers that Dave mentioned, certainly the main stem of the Willamette, the Coast Fork, those other rivers that used to have wild runs but don't have any left anymore. There's places they can put those hatchery fish and provide hatchery fish for local folks to access.
Dave Thomas, this interbreeding, is that simply because there are so many of the hatchery fish?
Unfortunately, it's not. It's the reason we're concerned about interbreeding is there is a very substantial loss of what biologists call fitness, which boils down to survival and the reproduction rate of the offspring. And when fish are raised in hatcheries, there's now a substantial body of data that shows that when they do very well in hatcheries, they quickly adapt to that, and they do very poorly in the wild. So the metaphor I've used is, well, what would happen if you allowed a bunch of Herefords to be released into the woods? Well, you'd have some very happy wolves for about a season, and then you wouldn't have any more. Hatchery fish have not proven generally able to produce self-sustaining populations, and they're reducing through interbreeding, they're reducing the fitness of the wild population. And so it's an insidious process in that, you know, they all look like salmon, and yet the reproductive capability of the population goes down from this because of this interbreeding.
Is there any way to do this right? I mean, in your opinion, because the hatchery fish, I mean, at one time, these were wild fish that were just sort of brought in, and their spawning process was taken indoors, in essence.
Yes, and I think the answer is, in principle, yes. There's two ways you could do this. One is you could in theory, artificially produce a fish that did well in the wild. At this point in time, that's just a theory, and there's some very tentative research going on at Oregon State about that. But that's a hope and a dream at this point. The other thing, and this has been done in other states, Washington recently, for instance, decided to set aside certain rivers as what they call genetic banks of wild fish by completely removing the hatchery fish from those areas so that the wild fish could thrive, but also in other places making hatchery fish available for anglers to take. We have not in this state been aggressive with such programs, and I think that's unfortunate. But there are examples around the country and internationally of people working on the same problem and have made some progress on it. So it's not something that can't be done. It's a matter of priorities and a will, I think.
Bruce Anderson and Dave Thomas from the Mackenzie Fly Fishers are our guests on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about a lawsuit over the Mackenzie River hatchery. So, Bruce, we already talked about what you're seeking here, but what has been the response? I mean, there must have been some face-to-face negotiations with the people you're suing.
Oh, yeah. We've spent a year, the last year. The Endangered Species Act requires that you file first of what's called a notice of intent to sue. And you can't sue until a minimum of 60 days after you file that notice. That's an attempt to give the parties an opportunity to talk. Well, we filed that notice back in November of 2011. 2012. And so it's been over a year until we got to the point of saying we're getting nowhere talking about this because ODF&W has indicated no willingness to change their plans whatsoever, not even to accept a proposal we made to substantially reduce the planning on the Mackenzie for a number of years while they study the impacts of a much lower planning rate on the wild fish and plant and put their excess hatchery fish in other rivers. They have been unwilling to accept that proposal on our part and basically told us they're going to continue business as usual. Well, we've said all along that, look, business as usual has brought us to the point where we are, and you can't keep planting these numbers of hatchery fish on top of these wild fish, or it won't be too many more years, and the last remaining wild strain of Chinook salmon in the upper Willamette drainage will be gone. And so we just said we can't keep talking about this. We've talked for a year. Meanwhile, you've planted another 800,000 fish. You have plans in this year, 2014, that's coming to do that again. We have to ask a third party to tell the parties what the law requires, and that's basically what we've done. The court's the arbitrator now to tell the parties what the law requires, and we're confident that the court will tell both ODFW and the Corps, you must agree on a plan that can be shown to provide safety and renewal to these wild fish that the National Marine Fisheries Service will agree to. And in the meantime, you can't be planting these substantial numbers of hatchery fish on top of the wild fish.
Dave Thomas, forgive me if I'm getting stuck on the whole concept of the interbreeding, but aren't wild fish and hatchery fish of the generally same species self-segregating?
No.
No.
They are, you're right on one point, they are the same species, or they wouldn't interbreed. More or less, essentially the definition of a species. But they're not self-segregating. There is a principle in hatchery management that the fish home to the hatchery, and that is instead of going out into the wild when they come back as adults from the ocean, they come back to the hatchery. Unfortunately, that's a principle, and it doesn't work that well in practice in all cases, and particularly when there's breeding fish around. Sexually reproducing organisms, as we all understand, tend to do that when they get a chance, and fish apparently are no different. So it is a problem. It continues to be a problem, and the best answer is physical separation.
All right, so stop putting the hatchery fish out there, or just stop putting them out there in such numbers?
Ideally, stop putting them out there in a place where they have a chance to, what we call straying is the polite term for reproducing in the wild and not coming back to the hatchery. And if the hatchery is where the area where they're released is somewhere else than the breeding grounds of the wild fish, then this becomes much less of a problem and generally manageable.
All right, Bruce Anderson.
The problem is what we've got is a hatchery, which is right at the point where wild salmon are reproducing, and so the homing instincts of both species is essentially the same place.
Bruce Anderson, quickly, is a hearing set yet on this?
No. There's a waiting period of 60 days on federal law before anything next step happens, so it'll be a while yet.
Okay, the lawsuit filed against the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers over the operation of the McKenzie River Hatchery on behalf of the McKenzie Fly Fishers and the steamboaters. From the McKenzie Fly Fishers, we've heard from Dave Thomas and Bruce Anderson. Gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you.